Deep within our soul, we all have this relentless inclination to compare ourselves to other people. It's what one woman named Sylvie DeWitt, an author, says is compulsive comparison syndrome. I've got it, you've got it, we all got it. And left unchecked, that relentless inclination to compare ourselves with other people, it will make our life miserable. It would leave us feeling empty. See, compulsive comparison syndrome, it's the perfect name because it kind of captures this idea that we all live in a constant state of comparison. We compare everything, our houses, our jobs, our career, our spouses, our marriages, our wealth, our vacations. We compare our kids. And just in the area of kids, there's all kinds of things to compare. When did your kid sleep through the night? When did your kid take the first step? When did your kid say the first word? Is my kid falling behind? What's your kid's GPA? What kind of behavior does your kid have? What kind of struggles does your kid have? Are my kids okay? What team is your kid on? Wow, that's a dangerous question. Is he on the competitive team, the traveling team, the select team, the varsity team? Which team are they on? There's really nothing that we won't compare with other people. And it's not just that we compare with other people, it's that we compare with ourselves or the past version of ourselves, what we looked like in the past. Or we compare with our ideal self, you know, this imaginary person that lives in our mind of what our life should be like and who we should be. Compulsive comparison syndrome. It's a syndrome. It's a sickness. It's a sickness that robs us of our joy. And the way it does it is this, is if your happiness is built on the foundation of you being better than, prettier than, smarter than, better GPA than, better college acceptance than, better athletic, you know, and athletics than, if your life is, and your happiness is built on that foundation, you are going to be in a world of hurt because there is always somebody. Always somebody prettier, always somebody smarter, always somebody's a better athlete, always somebody who's got a better family, always somebody who has more money, runs a bigger business, has a better grade point average. There's always somebody better than you. And not only that, but when you compare yourself with your ideal self, like your real life with your imaginary life, well, that didn't work, right? Real life is never, ever going to be able to compete with imaginary life. It just doesn't work that way. So the only hope for those people with compulsive comparison syndrome, but by the way, which is me and you, all of us, the only hope is to be content with the life that Jesus has given us. Maybe you need a reminder like I do, but today we're going to see again in the Bible, that God says that if we build our happiness on circumstances, we will always be unhappy. That the quick road to unhappiness is fixing our eyes on other people. Because true and lasting happiness is only found by fixing our eyes on Jesus and walking the path, living the life that he's called us to. We're in the middle of this sermon series, Questions That Jesus Asked. We've been going through it all summer. We're going to keep going throughout the rest of the summer. And if you miss any, I think so far I've really enjoyed them. And so Dave's sermon last week, Patrick's sermon the week before, all I thought they've been good. So maybe go to the app and just listen, stay connected, even if you can't be here on a Sunday morning. And I think you'll be glad you did. Today we're going to be back in a text that we were in a few weeks ago, and that's John chapter 21. Now, John's gospel is only 21 chapters, so we're back in the last chapter. But let me remind you or catch you up on what's been going on that will help set the scene for the conversation between Jesus and Peter today. Okay? So here's the deal. Peter's one of the lead disciples, and he's been following Jesus, but right before Jesus is crucified, he's put on trial, and Peter's standing outside watching, and he denies that he knows Jesus. Out of fear and cowardice, he denies three times that he has anything to do with Jesus. And Peter realizes what he's done, and he breaks down in tears. He's humiliated. He's let Jesus down at the crucial moment of his life, and he just feels so utterly miserable and sinful. But then after Jesus is raised from the dead, Jesus and Peter have this conversation in which Jesus asks Peter three times. Remember, there's three denials. Three times he asks him, "Do you love me? Do you love me? Do you love me?" And Peter says, yeah, I love you. But the three times he asked him, "Do you love me?" were to show that all of Peter's and all of our sins have been forgiven. Past, present, future, Jesus is saying, "Peter, I know you bailed on me, but I forgive you." And not only that, but Jesus reinstates Peter to this position of leadership in the church. I know you failed me, but you're forgiven, and I'm going to give you a leadership position back to you. And he says, Jesus says to him, "Peter, that leadership position is eventually going to cost you your life. You're going to die. It's a hard death. It's an ugly death." Now, Peter doesn't know it at the time, because we have the benefit of history, looking back, we know that it's very likely that Peter was crucified in Rome by the Roman emperor. But Peter doesn't know that at the time. He just knows that Jesus has told him he's going to have a really hard death. And the way I picture it in my mind is that Peter sees John. He's having this conversation with Peter, or Jesus, "You're forgiven, you're restored, you're reinstated, you're gonna be a leader, it's gonna have a hard death." And he, out of the corner of his eye, Peter sees the disciple John. And Peter has compulsive comparison syndrome. And so what do you think Peter does? He goes, "Well, what about him?" Watch, John chapter 21, verse 21. When Peter saw him, that's John. When Peter saw John, he asked, "Lord, what about him?" He just can't resist it. He just wants to know, what's going to happen to him, Lord? And how does Jesus respond? Well, he responds with a question. Question that he wants to ask us this morning. Jesus answered, "If I want him to remain alive until I return, what is that to you?" What's that to you, Peter? You must follow me. And then he goes on to say, because of this, the rumor spread among the believers that this disciple, meaning John, would not die. But Jesus did not say that he would not die. He only said, "If I want him to remain alive until I return, what is that to you?" See, Peter, he has a comparative or compulsive comparison syndrome. And I told you that we would compare just about anything in our life. And that's shown out here, because what's Peter comparing to John is death. He's like, "If I'm going to have a hard death, what about him? What kind of death is he going to have, Jesus? Is it going to be easier than me?" Because what Peter's really asking Jesus is what's John's life going to be like? What's his ministry going to be like? Am I a bigger deal than him? Or how do we rank? How do we compare? And really underneath that, what Peter's really asking Jesus is, "Jesus, am I getting a fair deal? Am I getting a fair deal?" Because think about it for a second. Here is Peter, who has been forgiven, he's been restored, he's been reinstated. He should be full of joy at all that God has done for him. But comparison steals your joy. And so instead of joy and celebration and thanksgiving and worship, he's comparing. "Hey, am I getting a fair deal?" Something is wrong with us when we can't be happy because we're always wondering if somebody else might have it better. And so Jesus asks Peter a question that I think he's asking us this morning. What is it to you? Notice what Jesus doesn't say to Peter. He doesn't say, "Hey, Peter, just let me tell you, here's how John's life's going to work out. Here's the successes, the challenges, the struggles that come with every life. Here's how it's all going to play out, and here's how you rank in comparison." He didn't tell him that, just like he doesn't tell you what your sister's life's going to be like. Just like he doesn't tell you how your classmate, your coworker, your friend's life is going to play out. Instead, when he asks the question, "Am I getting a fair deal? What about him? What about her?" What Jesus asks is, "What's it to you? You follow me." See, stop comparing. Stop fixing your eyes on other people. Stop comparing your life, your struggles, your hardships, the good things, the bad things. Stop. Stop comparing your blessings to other people. But then Jesus follows up with one more thing after that question. Let's go back and look at it. Verse 22. Jesus answered, if I want him, again, John, if I want John to remain alive until I return, what is that to you? You must follow me. See, when Jesus tells us that we must follow him, what he's telling us is that he's enough for us. The best life for me, the best life for you, the best life for any person is the life that Jesus has marked out for us. It doesn't get any better than following him. But like Peter, we have compulsive comparison syndrome. And we compare everything in our life. We compare how we look to other people, how they look. This headline, I think, should be in The Onion, but it is a legitimate headline out of the New York Post. I left New York City so I could feel hotter. I mean, there's nothing crazier in my mind than this story. It is full of stories. This article is full of stories of people, both men and women, who left New York and went to other places so that they could feel better about their appearance. And so story after story of a person who left family, left friends, left a good job, left everything. Why? Because they felt insecure about their appearance. And so they left New York, where all the beautiful people are, to go to your city, where all the ugly people are. I mean, it is absolutely crazy. There's so many quotes I could pull out of here, but that woman in the picture, I just took her quote since she was in the headline. Here it goes. I got way hotter when I moved away, says Janice Eisenman. Is this like real? A 40-year-old former fashion exec who pulled off an escape from Greenwich Village a couple years ago, now working as a fitness instructor in Calgary, Alberta, the 5'4", 125-pound Eisenman blamed New York's boorish bros, I love that term, boorish bros for eroding her self-esteem. Now look, I'm sure the boorish bros are insufferable. I'm sure they're ridiculous, but something tells me this is a little deeper than just the boorish bros. Another quote in the article, this from a psychologist. A bruised ego is a very common New York syndrome, said Upper East Side psychologist Catherine Smirling. There's always someone who's going to be better looking or have nicer clothes than you. It's a perennial quest for perfection. People in New York think they are such a big deal, don't they? Like, hey, we have this thing in New York where there's a lot of pretty people. Yeah, come on. That's true everywhere. Hey, same for Columbia. Same for any city you live in. Same if you go to the crossing. Same if you go to your school. Same if you go to your workplace. There are always people who look better than you do. Right? It's inescapable. This quest for perfection leaves everyone feeling insecure. So when you see someone more attractive than you, then you're tempted toward insecurity. I think Jesus would look at you and ask you, what's that to you if I've blessed that person in that way? You follow me. But because we have compulsive comparison syndrome, it's not just appearance, we compare everything. For example, we compare how much stuff we have, to other people that we know. So there's something I've shown you, a study I've shown you before, maybe somebody else has too. It's been years since I did it, but it just captures something about the human condition that is so good and so insightful and so helpful. It's an academic study done by a couple professors, Solnick and Hemway, 1998. And here's what they asked people. They gave people two options. I've called them option A and option B. And in option A, you make $50,000 a year, and everybody else makes $25,000 a year. Now, the cost of everything you do, cost of all goods and services, are the same in both options. But in option B, you make $100,000 a year, but everybody else makes $250,000. Now, they went and they asked people, which would you prefer to be? Which option do you prefer? Now, because the cost, everything costs the same, the only logical answer is I would prefer option B, right? Because in option B, I got twice as much as I do in option A. I can have twice as much stuff, twice as good a vacation, twice as big a house, twice as much of everything. So of course I want option B. Except when they went out and asked everybody what they wanted, they all said they wanted option A. Really? Yeah. What it kind of shows is that I don't necessarily want a lot of stuff. I just want more stuff than you. Yeah? I don't need a lot of stuff. I just want to make sure I got more than you because that makes me feel good. And so when you see people that have more stuff than you and you're tempted toward despair, when you see people that have more stuff than you and you're tempted to complain, Jesus would look at you and ask you, what's it to you that I've blessed them with more stuff than you? You follow me. We have compulsive comparison syndrome, and so we also compare our successes. How are my achievements and successes lining up with yours? In 1993, federal regulators required publicly traded corporate boards to release the financial packages, salaries and packages of CEOs. And the reason they did that is because they thought that if everybody knew, if the public knew, if companies and boards had to go public with what they're paying these CEOs, all those salaries would come down. There'd be a kind of public shaming. I can't believe you're paying someone so much money, and all the salaries of CEOs would come down. So, 1993, the federal regulators require this. The information is released. Of course, the media outlets write on it, do stories on it. Here's how much CEO of such and such place makes. Here's how much CEO of such and such place makes. And what happens? Do the salaries go down? No. They skyrocket. Why? Because it's the way the CEOs kept score with one another. And they said, well, don't you know what I've done with my company? And that person's getting paid that much money, and I've done such a better job. I've been here longer. I've turned this thing around. This company owes it. You know, whatever it is, however, I got to be more than him. I got to be more than her. No, salaries went from being, let me make sure I get it right. Salaries, CEO salaries went from being 131 times as much, the average worker of that company, to 369 times as much. Because you see, salaries, financial packages, are the way that CEOs keep score. We keep score in all kinds of ways. To know that my successes are more important or better or more earned by me than you. So when we see someone who is more successful than us and we're tempted to feel inadequate, Jesus would look at us and ask, what's it to you if I've blessed them in that way? Will you follow me? What's it to you that she can get into those jeans you can't and that he got that office that you wanted and that family took a better vacation than you? What's it to you how I blessed other people, Jesus says. You just follow me. Now, here's the really weird thing, I think, is that depending on how it goes, you can come out of this comparison game feeling really low or really full of yourself. Right? I mean, you can look up to people who have more than you, more successful, better, whatever, more attractive, whatever. They're doing better, and you can feel jealous and resentful as you look up at them. But you can also find people who aren't doing as well as you, who don't have as much as you, and when you see them, you feel very proud and superior. Let me show you how it works. I think my family, Christine and I, would say that we have a very average house. Very average, not bad, not great, just very average. But when we go to some people's house that have much nicer houses, some of them are much younger than us, or we can see these big houses, nice houses, well-decorated houses, and we come home and we're tempted to think, what a dump we live in, right? Boy, this is ridiculous, this house we live in. But then we go to some other people's houses, and we come home and go, man, we've been blessed. This house is awesome. Christine went to, my wife went to visit some family recently. They're going through some really hard times, some significant struggles, and they don't have much. And she came home and was telling me about it. It was really emotional. It just felt guilty for all the things that we have, which was right after we complained about all the things we didn't have. You know, we are screwed up people. The same house can make you feel guilty because I got so much, but ashamed because I've got so little. Something is wrong with us. Can we opt out of this game? Like opt out of the comparison game? Like just stop playing the game? Is there a cure to compulsive comparison syndrome? Well, there's some false cures, some things that you say, I say, we all say, have heard. Things like, hey, just focus, if you're feeling down, just focus on the areas that you're gifted, attractive, successful. Now, what's that saying? If you feel bad because you're looking up at people better than you, just find some areas of life, some people you can look down on, and you'll feel better for a while. Right? Hey, those people that you look up to, those people that they got the same problems you do. Just remember that there are areas of their life that are falling apart, and you can feel superior to them in that. Right? There are people far worse off than you. See, those aren't cures. Those are just changing one kind of comparison to another kind. It's just changing the jealousy to pride, the envy to superiority. But they miss the root cause. And if you don't know the root cause of compulsive comparative syndrome, then you're never going to be able to really address the issue. So I'm going to show you an article from the New York Times. And it's the weirdest thing where you will find good theology. And I don't even know if this guy knows what he's saying, but just track with me for a second, okay? New York Times, here we go. James Hong, a co-founder of hotornot.com. Please do not go there right now. But the New York Times, from the co-founder of something called hotornot.com, is going to teach us something really important, so hang on. It's a dating site found that his $55,000 Porsche Boxster had come to symbolize the trap he often saw others in Silicon Valley fall into. So notice that he knows it's not about the car. The car is representative of something bigger. Mr. Hong, 33, says hot or not success allowed him a very comfortable life without ever needing to get a job. Freedom money, as they call it. So this guy has experienced a ton of material blessings, so much that he didn't have to work, all at the age of 33. But nonetheless, saw himself succumbing to the envy malaise. After all, his best friend, Matt Levkin, was a founder of PayPal and has a net worth probably into the tens of millions. So you see the comparison game going, right? I've got so much money, I don't have to work, but he's got more. Oh, okay. So in a conspicuous move to get out of the game, Mr. Hong has decided to sell his sports car and has bought a Toyota Prius. He's slumming it now. I don't want to live the life of a Boxster, because when you get a Boxster, you wish you had a 911. Now notice he's comparing it to life. The Boxster's a stand-in for life. I don't want to live the life of a Boxster, because when you get a Boxster, you wish you had a 911, he said, referring to a much more expensive Porsche. And you know what people who have 911s wish they had? They wish they had a Ferrari. Mr. Hong said his most effective coping mechanism for feeling outstripped by his friend's wealth, beyond his choice of cars, is to try to put it out of his mind. The only way I've dealt with it over time is to consciously decide not to care, he said. Still, he confesses, every now and then when I hear they're getting a certain valuation, I think the business is getting a certain valuation of worth, I think I need that too. There's a little devil inside all of us that says, why not you? You've heard that voice, right? Why not me? Now, I don't know how much truth Mr. Hong understands that he is saying here, how much biblical truth, but it's chock full of insights. I mean, let's start with this. No matter how successful we are, we always know somebody more successful. He's got freedom money, don't work money at 33, but he knows somebody who's got more money. Does Mr. Hong think he's rich? No. Because he knows people who have more. That's why you don't think you're rich. Why? Because you know somebody that's got more money than you. But you know what? That person that has more money than you, that you think of as rich, He or she knows somebody with more money than them, and they don't think they're rich either. And it goes with not just wealth, but it goes with appearance. You think that person's pretty? Well, that person knows people prettier. They don't think they're pretty or handsome or whatever. It goes in every area. You think that person's successful? They know somebody more successful. No matter what we have, we're not content with it. No matter what we have, if we're gonna build our life on the foundation of having more or better than others, it's gonna be a miserable, miserable life. It's not just true of cars, it's true of anything. Now, I don't know a thing about cars. I mean, not one thing about a car. And so I thought, what's a Porsche Boxer? I don't know. So I went and got a picture, right? And so maybe you don't know, maybe you're as dumb as me. And so here is a picture of a Porsche Boxer. Okay, pretty nice car. But he said everybody who gets a Porsche Boxer, what do they want? They want a Porsche 911. Okay, well, cool. And if you have a 911, remember, what do you want? A Ferrari. Now, I don't know about you, but I think all those cars look the same. Yeah, but I am not tempted to play the car game, but I'm tempted to play plenty of other games in other areas of my life. Maybe you're like me and it's not cars. Maybe it's how fit you are. Maybe it's how good your marriage is, how good your kids are. It doesn't matter. We all have a game that we're playing. And as long as we're playing the comparison game, we will be assured that we'll stay unhappy. Because you're always going to know somebody more attractive, always know somebody more fit, with better behaved kids, with a cleaner house, with a bigger house, somebody who's more organized than you, who takes better vacations, who has a better GPA, who has a better resume, who got accepted to a better college, who runs a bigger company. You're always going to know it, somebody like that. That hole in your heart can only be filled by Jesus. And then Mr. Hong gets the heart of the matter. If you're looking for a cure to compulsive comparison syndrome, Mr. Hong will lead the way. He won't get us all the way there, but he'll put us down the right track. Because he says that we have in our head that question, why not me? Why can't I look that way? If she looks that way, why can't I? If she's that successful, why can't I be that successful? If she got those grades, why can't I get them? If she's that athletic, why can't I have it? If she got that person to like her and be in that in-group, why can't I? Why not me? You know, why not me is a dangerous question, because what it ends up doing is it ends up saying that we deserve better than what we got. When you play the comparison game, you're going to end up saying, I deserve better. But let me just ask you, you deserve better from who? From who? Who do you deserve better from? That's not just a question to move on. I want you to answer the question in your head. Who do I deserve better from? Because see, when we look around at people's lives around us and they're doing better and we complain or we feel despairing or we're disappointed or we're envious, we're jealous, whatever it is, because they got the looks, the skill, the height, the job, whatever it is, what we're really doing is saying, God, you owe me. God, I deserve better from you. We don't think we're doing it. We think our problem is with the person who's got what we want, but it's not. It's not. Our problem is not with them, our problem is with God, because if God gave it to them, why couldn't he give it to me? Why did God create this inequity? Why did I get the short end? Look at what he or she has that I don't. God owes me. Because if God had taken care of me like he took care of other people, I'd be better off relationally, professionally, financially. So if Jesus showed up here this morning, right here at the crossing, would you take up all your disappointment and all your despairs and all your mistreatments and all the short end sticks of the stick you got? Would you bring it all up and gather it all in your arms and walk up to Jesus and say, Jesus, you let me down. You owe me. No. No. And if you realize that you wouldn't say to Jesus, you owe me, if you wouldn't say it to his face, you're close to a breakthrough. Now, if you think you would, if you think God does owe you and you'd say that to him, then you fundamentally misunderstood what the Bible is about, what the gospel is about, fundamentally misunderstood who God is and who we are. Because the reality is that God may have not blessed us with every blessing that this world has to offer. He may not have blessed us in every way that he's blessed everyone else, but he has met our deepest need. God doesn't owe us. We owe him. God doesn't owe us anything. We owe him. And anything that we're missing in our life, well, it compares to nothing. It does not compare at all to the needs he's met in our life. See, we have to take communion this morning. Have to. Because at the cross, you'll never look and say to Jesus, you owe me. Not in the shadow of the cross where he died for our sins. You won't say, you owe me, Jesus. We have to take communion today because it is a tangible reminder of all that God has blessed us with in Jesus. That he's forgiven us and that he loves us. And every good thing we have in our life comes from his hand. We have to take communion today because this is the cure for comparison or compulsive comparison syndrome. This is the cure to know that in Jesus, the one who died for me, the one who gave his life for me, it is in him that life is found. I will follow him because in Jesus is the best life I could ever hope for. On the night before Jesus was crucified, he took a loaf of bread after sharing a meal with his followers. And said, this is my body, take and eat. And he poured some wine into a cup and said, this is my blood, poured out for the forgiveness of sins. In just a moment, I'm going to invite you to come forward and share in communion with us. When you come, just come forward and take a piece of the bread that's in our hand. You'll walk up to these stools, take a piece of the bread that's in our hand and dip it in the juice that's on the stool or the cup of wine that's in our hand. You don't need to say anything, although we will say a word of encouragement to you. At the crossing, every time we take communion, we remember the people in our church community and the broader community who have physical and financial needs, and the baskets up here with a white cloth in it. Well, any money goes there during communion goes to that and only that purpose. Anytime, any week you want to pray with someone, there are people in this little prayer room over here in between services to my left, your right, who would love to pray with you and for you. I'm going to invite those people up who are going to help serve communion, and let's let the rest of us bow our head in prayer for a moment. Father, I pray that you would take your word, this truth, that in Jesus' life and in Jesus' forgiveness and in Jesus' happiness, and push it deep into our heart. That you would fill that hole in our heart, that you yourself would be the cure for this compulsive comparison syndrome that we find ourselves wrapped up in. Father, I pray that we would be so content with the life of following Jesus that we would be able to celebrate those who have more earthly blessings than us, and that we would be able to help those who are struggling. May we find our life not in others, but in Jesus. We ask this in your name. Amen. People of God, come to the table of the Lord Jesus Christ.